everybody, and welcome to a Binge Watchers podcast. My name is Lauren.
Lisa.
Wow, wait, good introduction.
Thank you.
We are going to be talking about the Netflix original series called Chef's Table. They just put out 6 episodes for us to binge watch last week.
So I only watched the first 3 because I thought that was the game plan, but Lauren is a traitor and watched all 6.
I was obsessed. Super obsessed. And I really, you know, the first 3 were dudes and the 4th one was a woman, and I was like, I gotta watch the woman, and then I was like, I gotta just finish it.
I had that same moment of feeling like I needed to watch the woman, and then work got really busy and I was like, fuck it,
and then
I'll do it later.
You betrayed our sex, is that what I heard? Because that's what I'm hearing.
I did. I betrayed our gender. I feel like less of a feminist for it. Beyonce would be so disappointed.
So what did you think about the show? This was my suggestion of a show. Lisa, I don't think I'd heard about it. Is that right?
I didn't, and I was so surprised that I hadn't, because I'm usually so up on the cooking show things, because I love cooking.
You're such a foodie.
And I love to cook, and I almost went to culinary school, and I mean, Top Chef is like, if anybody out there who works at Top Chef wants to give me a job, please call me. But I hadn't heard of it, and then I loved it. I loved every single fucking second of it. She said with enthusiasm.
I like it. This is a lot of it. For those people listening, this is a lot of enthusiasm from Lisa. So
I'm really stepping out of my comfort zone here.
So the show, like, at least what I knew about it beforehand was that it's a docuseries about people who own amazing restaurants in the world. And I think when we watched it, finding out is that all of these people were featured on the 50 best restaurants in the entire world. Is that right?
Yeah. And so they range anywhere from people that I've heard of, like I've totally heard of Dan Barber, to people who I have no idea who you are, but like, welcome to my life and I want to eat all of your food.
We're going to go on a food tour after this.
Oh my God. I plan to be so fat at the end of it. I'm so
happy.
How
can you be fat? These little portions are like the size of, I don't know, like a penny.
Did you not see how much Massimo loves cheese?
That's true. Well, but he's Italian, so I guess that's kind of justified.
As is my father. I was raised in a family, I mean, you're Mexican, my dad's Italian, so we were both raised in cultures that very much appreciate cheese in all forms.
It's very true. Cheese is my life. What were your first thoughts? Obviously, they were positive.
First thoughts. Do-do-do-do-do. Thoughts. Woo! It's the theme song.
It's our attempt at a jingle.
So I started watching this, and the first episode opens with what I felt like was kind of a stereotypical news package, being like, there was an earthquake, people are dying, whatever, and I was kind of like, oh, that's what this is gonna be. And then they start talking about this guy Massimo and how there was an earthquake that damaged just like basically what he said was a lifelong supply of Parmigiano Reggiano. And he needed to find a way to save it because it was all going to go away and all these people were going to lose their jobs and the cheese economy was going to go to shit. So he came up with a new recipe, and it became really popular all over the world, and all of this cheese was sold and therefore all of this cheese was saved. And from that moment on, I felt like I have a personal connection with this man and I love him.
Just because of the cheese.
A side note, growing up in my house, we had a wheel of cheese all of the time. There was a supplier that my dad knew that sold Locatel cheese, so we always had this giant wheel of cheese in our basement refrigerator. And whenever we needed cheese, we would like go downstairs and cut off like a hack and then go upstairs and eat half of it plain and then shred the other half for whatever pasta we were eating that night. So yeah, I grew up with like a soulful connection to cheese. So minute 2, I was in love with not only the show, but like this man.
A man who fights for cheese is a good man.
Is a great man. He needs a medal and a statue, and he needs to be a saint. I'm calling Francis in the morning.
See, I liked the first one, but I really, really, really liked the second one. That was the one that really got me into the show.
You and Dan Barber?
Yeah, Dan Barber runs this restaurant inside New York. He has another restaurant right outside of New York where it's a farm to table, so he grows everything. Everything's local, everything's fresh. And I'm like, that sounds delicious. Like, everything he made. At one point in the show, he made whole grain bread from like literal whole grains. Like he sat there and ground them up and then baked the bread. And I was like, I bet that bread tastes so freaking good.
Oh my God. And they're passing around this bread and they're all kind of putting butter on it. And I was the hungriest that I've ever been maybe in my entire life.
I feel like it's really hard to sell a vegetable to normal day America. Like, he has this one where it's essentially like vegetables in an order, just like kind of like on spikes so you can pull them off. And I was like, that radish looks so good. And I don't think I've ever had a thought where I'm like, I really want a radish right now.
Right, but the number one thing that I wanted was to go out and buy some radishes.
Yeah, just go hit up a farmer's market of sorts. So.
Oh my God. And just eat some, like, chickens.
Oh my God, aww.
I'm sorry.
I'm a vegetarian, and that is sad. But I get it. Yeah, and then what did you think about the third episode?
The third episode was great. I liked it, but it wasn't my favorite. Massimo was probably my favorite. I really liked Dan Barber. But I really loved the guy from the third one. Like, I thought that it was really interesting that, like, you have Massimo, who, like, loves food, and he's made a life around it. He's very successfully made a stable life in a lot of different ways. So, like, he has his wife and his family, and he's making everything work, and his, like, wife is, like, very happy and part of every decision that he makes, right? And then you have Dan Barber, who struggles with balancing everything, and he kind of feels like he's not watching his kids grow up, but he's making the sacrifice to have this successful restaurant and make this farm-to-table movement a thing by giving up, like, spending time with his kids. And then you have the third guy, Francis, who, like, really cares about his restaurant and seems to really mostly only care about his restaurant. And he's like, if I don't feel like I have a connection to you, I cut you out. Fully acknowledges that he's kind of, like, screwing over his kid's psyche by favoring his career and his restaurant and everything else over, like, their happiness and moving them around. And even his employees, he's like, as soon as somebody gets to the top, I cut them because, I mean, not... He doesn't, like, shank them, but he fires them. He literally murders them. he fires them because he thinks that they've reached their potential with him and they need to move on. So I thought that they did a really great job of, especially in those first three episodes, kind of balancing, like, what the life of a chef could be like. And so I found the last guy to be really fascinating in this kind of Anthony Bourdain kind of way, but he wasn't my favorite.
It's kind of hard to binge watch. I watched it over 3 days. It's, like, a lot of learning at once, mm-hmm. which I think is hard with binge watching shows. I am, again, a huge fan of docuseries. I could watch them for hours and hours, but when you watch them about the same thing for hours, it gets a little worn down.
It feels like class, and you're just starting that class over every time you start a new episode.
I felt differently, actually, about the second half of shows. Like, I wish that those shows would have been the first shows, because the lady in episode 4 was super interesting, and the guy in the last episode was super interesting. He has this restaurant that's in the middle of nowhere, like in a town of like less than 100 people, and mm-hmm. it's one of the best restaurants in the world, and his story is super interesting. And maybe they did that so that they had a really strong finish to the season. That would be
possible,
my guess.
Yeah. Well, had someone warned me that they were going to watch all 6 episodes, I would have made time.
Sorry. Obviously, Lisa is way more cool than I am and had more plans this weekend, because obviously I didn't, and I was like, let's watch more Netflix.
I'm gonna nap so hard after this. But yeah, I mean, it was like, I mean, even there was a segment 5 minutes in where this woman, who in my head I was referring to as Kathy Bates, is kind of breaking down like the culinary god that is this man Massimo, and I was just watching it and I was like, I'm so fascinated by you and I'm so hungry.
That's the other hard part about watching the show, is I was starving the entire time for food that I didn't even know what it was.
Right.
It looked like art, and I'm like, but I want to eat it.
Right, they're just making foams everywhere, and you're like, put that in my mouth.
So let me lay sauces. Down, and you can just pour it. Oh my God.
Dan Barber's probably made me the most hungry, by far.
His looked the most like real food. Like, when you get into this foodie kind of world, a lot of the food looks like art or things that have been painted on. It looks not right. like your typical food. His food looked like real food. So,
therefore... Well, and Francis's was definitely very... No, I guess it was Massimo's, right? That was very, like, art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he went to museums, and then he kind of tried to remake those things on dishes. So, yeah, you're right. That was definitely, like, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to spend $300 on food, and I'm still going to be, like, kind of hungry when I leave.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking.
Yeah, and Dan's was like, I'm going to sit down, and they're going to have to roll me to my apartment.
That's what I kept thinking through most of these, like about half of them. I was like, okay, what at this restaurant? I actually looked up the lady in LA and I was like, how much would it cost to eat? And it was like $180 for a 10 course meal, which is pretty good. I mean, the courses are very small, but I'm like, you would leave that restaurant hungry, I'm sure, or I would, or not, maybe not hungry, maybe not full. Mm-hmm. Because the portions are all, you know, if you touched your pointer finger and your thumb together, they're all about that big.
Yeah. I mean, and I've definitely gone to restaurants in New York where you spend an obscene amount of money on food. And some of them, like, I went to Morimoto and I ate all of the sushi. But, like, 2 hours later, I was like, can we go get ice cream? And then I did. But, you know, I've been to, like, a couple Michelin star places where you go and you just get, like, everything. And they just keep coming and you leave and you never want to eat again. And those are the places, like, if I'm going to spend that much money, I mean, this is really just us and our food preferences, but if I'm going to spend $300 on dinner, like, I want to feel like I'm never going to eat again.
I think that's probably the main difference between us, is that I would never spend $300 on a meal. I guess, like,
well,
these are worth
it. I didn't pay for it.
Oh, well, that's true. But, like, I'm one of those people that's like, I bet that cart over there, that guy that, like, probably hasn't showered, I bet that food's super good. So...
But I feel that way, too. I mean, I went to Smorgasburg yesterday. I don't know that that's necessarily a cart, which, for anyone who... Smorgasburg is kind of a food flea market, I guess, right? I got, like, this giant spare rib, and I ate all of it. It was so shameful.
Oh, my God, that's so good. I remember when we met last year, and it was all this drama, because I hate taking free samples. I feel like I'm stealing from people. And mm-hmm. Lisa did not understand that. And so she took free samples from every single person.
It's free.
I was like, no, these poor people and their local businesses that we're stealing from.
The group that I was with yesterday had definitely had my mentality.
Yeah, I could assume so. You were with that group. So obviously you liked the show. What point do you think it really, like, grabbed you? Like, what point were you like, I definitely can't wait for season two?
What was the moment that had me? Do we need a jingle for this too? Like, the moment that had me.
They all sound
I shouldn't
the same.
Sing anything ever.
All the jingles you do sound exactly the same.
I'm sorry, I'm not musically inclined. I can do one, I don't even know what rhythm.
There's no rhythm. Anyways, back to the point.
Whatever. So there was this moment when Massimo was talking about hiding under his grandmother's table, stealing tortellini. That food is the food of his life because he was hiding from his brothers who were trying to beat him up, and his grandmother was like, here, hide here, and while you do it, like, you know, eat some uncooked, like, delicious, just amazing tortellini. And so that's like the food that brings him home. My dad's Italian. My dad's whole family is Italian. I was just raised by a world of Italians. And pasta and, like, cheese and food were so important growing up. And as Laura knows, you know, I loved cooking growing up, partially because my great aunt Carol, who was an amazing cook, taught me how to cook and how to bake. And so I was watching that, and I was at work while I was watching it, and, like, almost crying, which is a I don't cry for shit. And the story was just so well told and put together and produced, and that was the moment of the show that I was like, this show is incredible. And I really think it was. Like, I think that it was really amazingly well-crafted storytelling.
They did the story that you're talking about, they did these amazing recreations of what he was talking about. So essentially the guy is giving an interview about his childhood. Obviously, they do not have video of this moment, but they recreated it in a way that didn't feel like your typical cheesy recreation. It was, like, a lot of really close shots of, like, flour and, you know, things in the air and, you know, the noises of people running around. It's kind of those memories that you draw on when you remember something. It's like you don't remember exactly what happened, but you remember, like, the smell in the kitchen, and you remember, like, you know, how hungry you were. And I think they did a really good job at pulling at those little memories that we do when we remember things.
Yeah, it wasn't like a campy History Channel recreation. It was definitely like, there was that shot kind of the window with the flower particles floating around.
Exactly, yeah, like through the sunlight. I get that. I think the point that it got me was definitely episode two. I, right after college, kind of made like a big food adjustment in my life. I stopped eating meat. I started eating more whole foods, more raw foods, more vegetables, things like that, trying to take better care of myself. And so it's something that I'm like passionate on, even though I very often eat ice cream and popcorn and things like that. It's just like something I'm more aware of, and I know how food like changes my body. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, hearing Dan Barber's stories about, you know, why he makes food and why he feels like it's important that food is local and food is fresh, and how he wants to inspire people to look at food in a different way. It was like, like, if I would have heard of him that at that point in my life when I was living in New York and doing that, it would have been, like, a really big influence on me. So I can appreciate that someone is trying to go back and turn the tables in an opposite direction, because right now we're actually processing food to, like, an extreme. Like, right. Everything is processed, and I can appreciate that he just wants to go pick whole grain and grind it by hand and make a bread. Like, right. You know everything that's in that food, and I don't think that we can look at most food today and be like, we know everything that's in there.
So Dan was your favorite chef?
Yeah, he was the favorite chef in the first three. I really, really liked the girl in episode four. I think that's worth watching. I mean, the good thing about this show is that I think that you can skip around. I think there's some kind of... there's a purpose for why they put people in this order, but if I were to say, probably the best three were Massimo, who's number one, Dan Barber, who's number two, and then Nikki, who runs a Japanese, like, tasting menu kind of restaurant in Los Angeles, was probably number three for me. Like, that would be the one to end it.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to keep watching it.
Do you think they could have done anything better in this series?
I kind of want to say no. I mean, I'm sure that there's always room for improvement, but one of the producers at my work does a lot of lifestyle content, and I called him into my edit maybe 15 minutes into the first episode, and I was like, you need to watch the show. It's amazing. I don't know. I just thought all of the stories were so well-crafted. They had so many, like, cute little personal moments. As cheesy as it is, I would put more women in it. Because there are six episodes and there's one woman. So, yeah, I was a little bit disappointed that the ratio was so small. But other than that, like, I don't know, I thought it was great. I really wouldn't change anything.
I also think there's something to be said about, I don't necessarily need to see six episodes on the 50 best restaurants in the world. I actually kind of wish that one of them was, like, somebody who's doing something, like, all these people are doing something extremely different than what's being done, but, you know, something outside of the box, something in, like, a local... Like, there's the IFC movie that came out, Hero Dreams of Sushi, is about, yeah, like, the guy that, you know, that makes amazing sushi at a Subway, you right. know, station. And so it'd be interesting to kind of see stories about different places and people that don't necessarily have to fit on this list.
I could get behind that. I do want to go to all of their restaurants. And I want to hang out with Massimo's wife. She seems super dope.
Well, you should do a day trip when you're in Europe.
Yes. I'll email her now.
Do it. Well, here, let's write about it. So what do you think this show is worth?
Canceling your Tinder date, going out with, like, your best girlfriend, eating the most expensive food in whatever city you live in, and then going home and watching the show.
I mean, I don't think you can watch the show and not have, like, a decent plate of food in front of you. So, yeah, I think it's worth, you know, not getting your Starbucks coffee for the rest of the week so that you can splurge on a nice meal. But don't eat it at the restaurant. I think you should bring it home and eat it in the plastic carton in front of your television with your roommate or your boyfriend or whatever, and binge watch pretty much all 6 hours at once while you eat your meal. Because the only way to watch this show is to have a full belly or you will die.
So high class plus some styrofoam.
Yeah, definitely have to have styrofoam. Styrofoam classes shit up, you know?
I feel like that's a good summary of your life, Lauren, is high class plus some styrofoam.
Yeah, I don't like to eat food in restaurants. I'm a big fan of taking things to go, because I would rather watch TV while I eat.
So I feel like that's it for Chef's Table. Definitely watch it, 100%. I don't care who you are, sit down and watch it, you'll love it. And make sure you do it on a very full stomach, because if not, you will want to eat everything in your apartment.
You can follow us on A Binge Watcher on Twitter. We're also A Binge Watcher on Facebook, and feel free to send us an email, abingewatcher@gmail.com. We'd love some suggestions on shows.
Theme songs.
We would love to speak to somebody about who could do jingles for us. We can not pay you much, but we will figure something out.
We'll pay you with our love.
Yeah.
That sounded a little hookery, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's too much. Cool. I think that's it for us this week. Join us for next week. I think we're doing Happy-ish or Broad City or something. We haven't figured that out yet. It will be a surprise.
We're definitely doing Happy-ish.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.